Subjective means under the direction of, and this is true about that portion of mind that acts as law. It is the creative, obedient, formative power. We need always remember that there is but one universal mind. Each one of us uses a portion of it. Really, each one of us is a portion of it. For all, everything is mind.
Well, that's a heavy thought. And my charge this week is to talk about mind as the ultimate discovery. The one thing that can change everything in our lives is to discover the meaning and the use of the universal mind. I really love talking about this subject because I think that learning that I could change my life by changing my thinking when I found Science of Mind was such a remarkable transformative experience in my life. I was chronically depressed for 35 years. I was in an abusive marriage. I had gone through a lot of trials and tribulations in various ways and things in my life. And when I moved forward in my life and I said, you know, I deserve better than this. I don't really think much of myself, but I know I deserve better than what I'm experiencing right now. There has to be another way to live. My experience was that my life had been threatened. If I left, I would die. And it sounds very dramatic, and it didn't turn out that way at all, but that was a threat that kept me where I was for a while. And I finally decided that I'd rather die than continue to live the way I was living. And so I liberated myself, and turned out that none of the threats were true. But I didn't know that at the time. I had to make a choice. And I made a very powerful choice. And within 2 days of making that choice, I went to a divorce support group and met a woman who decided she was going to be my best friend. And I wasn't feeling very friendly at the time and wasn't particularly responsive to her decision, but she was persistent. And so she kept calling me and saying, I want to go here, I want to go there, and you're going to come with me. And I would, just say okay. It was easier to say okay than to say no. So she took me all kinds of places, and she created a social life for me at a time when I was pretty lethargic in my own life. And one of the places she took me was to a study group that was studying Louise Hay. And Louise Hay teaches Science of Mind. Louise Hay was a Science of Mind practitioner before she became an independent New Thought minister. And I started learning about the power of the one mind and how the mind that each of us thinks with is not independent of the whole. There is a oneness underlying all things that connects everything with everything. And one way of seeing that oneness is to call it the mind of God, and that everything exists in the mind of God, and that the mind of God is creative. And so thought creates, whether it is thought at the cosmic level of the Creator or thought at the local level of the created that has that divine spark and that capacity to think. So in the Science of Mind philosophy, that's why we believe that our thought is creative, because we think with the mind of God, an individualized part of the mind of God. And we believe that we are all fully connected with the whole mind of God, so that even if there is something we don't know, that there is that within us that knows that we have access to, so that we have infinite guidance, we have intuition, we have the potential to allow that divine thought to flow through us and to us. And so living within that philosophy was very empowering for me in a time when I felt very disempowered in my life, because I felt like I could create another kind of life for me, where I didn't feel like a victim, where I didn't feel helpless, where I wasn't willing to be threatened, where I took control of my own life. And that was a huge change for me, and allowed my life to blossom in extraordinary ways. It was 24 years ago that I made that decision to create a new life for myself. And my life continues to expand in beauty and harmony and grace and power over those 24 years. And so I love this philosophy. I believe in this philosophy because it works for me. And it works for me because I work it. I focus my thought. It's a very powerful intention of mine all the time to focus on the things that are feeling expansive rather than contractive to me. And another way of saying that is that I feel my way through my thinking, and I pick the thoughts that feel like they open out for me, that they open to greater potential, that they open to greater power, that they allow more beauty to flow. And it's a very powerful thing to decide to choose what you think. Because I don't know about you, but I used to think I was what I thought. I thought my mind was who I was, that what I was thinking was the nature of my being, and that was the box I lived in, and this body was my being, and I walked around with it, and I had the thoughts it thought, and that's what who I was. And then all of a sudden I discovered science of mind, and I started finding out that there is another way to look at this life that we're living, and that we're not just a local finite presence with a limited lifespan, and then you croak and then it's over. But you can see us as eternal beings that are eternal as well as temporal, that we're currently eternal, not eternal maybe someday if we're good enough, if we follow all the right rules, but that we are already eternal, and that life is, whether it is in this state or other states, like water is, whether it's ice or whether it's mist or whether it's flowing, water is in different states of being. And I believe that we are in different states of being. Sometimes we are both physical and non-physical, local and non-local, but we are always at least non-local. And sometimes we're just non-local. Our physical bodies aren't present. We haven't manifested into the physical, but our consciousness continues to exist. And that belief empowers me to come to higher understandings about who I am and what I can do and how I want to show up in the world. And tuning myself to the frequency that I want to be expressing becomes my highest priority. Because if I don't specifically decide who I am and what to tune to, I am basically at the mercy of the thought around me. And, you know, you just have to tune on the TV for a little while and watch the news, and you see what kind of thought exists in the world. And you can tune to that thought that says you need to defend yourself, you need to protect yourself, life is really dangerous, there's all these people out to get you, and lots of terrible things are happening all the time to everybody. Or you can tune into the fact that lots of beautiful things are happening all the time to the people around you, and that you can look around the world and say that well-being is so much greater than not well-being. Charlie and I took a walk along the creek path this morning and had an opportunity to just experience the well-being of the forest and how everything was so peaceful there this morning. And we were in the shade, and it was a beautiful sunny day, but it was cool where we were walking, and the burbling of the creek as we passed the creek crossings was so lovely. And at the same time, you know, there are probably things in town that aren't going so well this morning. But our attention wasn't focused on what wasn't working. Our attention was focused on what was working. And we always have that choice. Where do we focus our attention? And when I asked in meditation this week what the point to my talk should be today, the guidance came through, said that what I should tell you is what you do with your thinking matters. What you do with your mind matters. And I thought, oh, that's a great subject, because that's really what I want to say, you know, that it, setting a priority on what we're thinking makes a difference. And then I realized that it's a pun, really, that what we do with our thought matters. It turns into matter. It turns into the life that we're living. And I love that Spirit gave me a kind of a two-level message to deliver today. Because although, you know, you can say that thought becomes things, and Ernest Holmes described that how our thought becomes things. For me, it's easier to think of it as what we think attracts like to it. I don't think that when I attract a new friend into my life that friend was created in that moment just for my thought. That friend has a history and a life of his or her own. But the fact that we came together is a congruency with the kind of thought that I'm thinking. And if I'm thinking that my friends are extraordinarily wonderful people and that I attract amazing conversations, and I attract wonderful, precious moments with people, and I attract extraordinary people, then I sit next to the person in the workshop that has a powerful message for me, or is so beautiful that I just fall in love in that moment. And I believe in falling in love a few times a day. So finding that opportunity to love the person that I'm with is a very powerful part of my life. And so I do my best every day to tune my awareness for the things that I'm looking for to the things that I most want to see. I tune to harmony and beauty and music, and I think about grace and divine power and intelligence and creativity and joy, and I celebrate those things wherever I find them, and I amplify them, I appreciate them, I talk about them, I point them out to other people, basically to anyone who will listen. I tell people that the world is beautiful and invite them to look at what I see. Because I remember what it was like when the world was dark and it wasn't beautiful to me. I've told this story before, but it's a powerful story for me. I remember the fall I moved to Denver. I got there and we only had one car. And my husband took off in the car on Thanksgiving morning and didn't tell me where he was going, and I didn't have a Thanksgiving dinner. I didn't have any friends. I was new in town and didn't know anybody, and so I was alone on Thanksgiving. I had some leftover Chinese food in the fridge. That was my Thanksgiving dinner, and I felt really sorry for myself. And I remember standing in the window of this beautiful new house I was living in, looking out at Pikes Peak. Had a gorgeous view out the back of Pikes Peak, and Pikes Peak was snow-covered in November. And it was a glorious view, and I was, I don't know how old I was, 20-something years old, and I was thin and young and healthy, and I had money in the bank, and I had a good job, and I couldn't think of anything to be thankful for, because I was so obsessed with the fact that I had this relationship that was devastatingly painful to me in that moment. There was none of the blessings that were so clearly available to me in my life from my perspective now. None of it was impacting my consciousness. I was just focused on the fact that I was miserable. And looking back on that now is so powerful, because there are many of the things that I had then that I don't have now that were really wonderful, that I just couldn't see. And, I'm not as fit, I'm not as healthy, objectively speaking, I'm not as young as I was then. But I am so much more grateful for my health today than I was then. I'm so much more aware of the joy of mobility and the beauty of life and the power of love, because there are dozens of relationships that are loving in my life, and I don't look to a single source for love. I know that the love comes from within me. It's the very nature of who I am, and I bring it to everywhere I go. And by my focus, I create my experience of my life. And it doesn't matter what's going on around me. I can create an extraordinary experience of life, even when things appear to be going wrong. And now I tell myself all the time, even though it appears that something's going wrong here and now, it's actually something going very, very right from a higher perspective that I don't see yet. And I'm willing to trust and have faith in that higher perspective, and that someday I'll have the 20/20 hindsight that'll let me look back at this moment and see why this was a powerful part of a progression in my life, whether it was the death of my husband or the divorces that I've gone through, or whatever it was. I can always see that there was a bigger picture unfolding in my life. And one of the phrases that came to me in meditation that was powerfully supportive of that worldview now was, I heard, the team changes as the terrain changes. And what I saw was the hero's journey of the Lord of the Ring trilogy. I read about the Lord of the Ring when I was in high school. And, since they've made the wonderful movies about it. And in the hero's journey, or the heroine's journey in my case, the teams continue to change as life flows in different directions. And it's really helped me learn to let go with love and know that as I just rest in the present, that I focus on love and love comes to me. And what comes to me comes in the perfect way for the perfect match for this day. And it may not look the way I wanted it to look. It may have a form that's quite different than the form that I expected or demanded at other times in my life and was disappointed. Mm-hmm. But my life is filled with love today in a way that it sure wasn't 25 years ago or 30 years ago, when I was so incredibly depressed and upset that I wasn't creating the life that I wanted. And so when I thought about what else I could tell you about today, it occurred to me to tell you another story that I've told many times, and many of you have heard it, but it's worth repeating, I believe. One of the most precious visions I ever had was in meditation. I went into a place where what I thought manifested instantly. And so I originally saw this beautiful black velvet curtain, and I was drawn to it powerfully, and I ended up going up to it, backing into it, and kind of wrapping it around me because it felt so good. It was just this beautiful energy in this gorgeous fabric. And as I was there with this black wrapped around me, I thought, I wonder what it would be like to fall back into it. And I had a meditation not long before where I fell forward into a light-filled space. And it was an extraordinary experience. And I trust my meditative process. So I thought, I'm going to try it. And so I thought, what would it be like to fall back? And I did. I fell back. And I saw myself rotating backwards in space, like floating weightless. And rotating backwards. And I thought, this is what it's like to be a planet, to rotate without resistance. and just move, and I could sort of see myself almost like a strobe light, that I could see the parts of my body moving around. And I thought, I wonder what it would be like to be in a flat plane, and all of a sudden I was stationary, horizontal. And then I thought, well, what would it be like if I had something to stand on, and then I was vertical. And then I thought, what would light be like in this space? And a wonderful Tiffany lamp turned up, like a table lamp, only it was floating in space. There was no table. And then this unseen hand pulled the chain, and light came out through the lamp and down from the lamp. And at that point, I got a little nervous, and I thought a kind of a scary thought, and a monster appeared. And I took a deep breath, and I thought, okay, you know, now I have to deal with this that I thought up. And gave me a little appreciation of what it's like to have a buffer of thought, that we can think a scary thought and not have to deal with it face to face in that moment. And so I thought, well, love is always the answer. So I, even though this looks like a monster, I'm going to love this monster. And it became very docile and wandered away. And then I thought, what does God look like in this space? And I didn't see anything. I heard a voice. And it was like a little boy, eager voice that said, what do you want me to be? What do you want me to be? And in a very real sense, I think that our lives are an endless expression of our answer to God, what do you want me to be? Because whatever we're focused on today is what we're telling God to be in our life tomorrow and through the days to come. So it puts another spin on what we think about matters when we recognize that everything we're experiencing in our lives is God being what we've asked for with our thinking. And getting more specific and more clear about what we want to focus on, what we want God to be in the days to come, can be remarkably rewarding. And my experience is, and I don't claim it has to be true for everyone, but my experience is that the more I focus on what the divine is, the more I focus on what in science mind we call the qualities of God, love and light and peace and power and grace and joy and energy and oneness and wholeness, clarity and wisdom and beauty. The more I focus on those things, the more I see those things, the happier I am, and the more I have to give, because I'm filled to overflowing with love and with joy when I focus in those directions. And then I have love and joy to share with others around me. And that's way more fun than sharing misery and tears, which is I did for many years. And I've learned that if somebody pushes my buttons, that it's not about them, it's about me having buttons installed. And I get to make another choice about whether I want to continue to respond to that button or if I want to take another run at it and say, okay, this doesn't feel good, but I don't want to respond in that way because that isn't who I am. Who I am is love. Who I am is grace. Who I am is power. And I am empowered to make a choice about how I'm going to respond to this situation today. And I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to relax. I'm not going to respond from a place of tension. I'm just going to get myself calm and ask myself who I am and who this person is. Because this person is responding in a way probably that I've responded many times in my life. And Abraham Hicks recently has been saying, step one is ask. When you have contrast in your life, you ask. Step two is the universe answers. And step three is you allow it to come into your life. And what they say now is that we're adorable when we're in step one. And so I see that person in my life who's pushing my buttons in that moment as being adorable in step one. They're asking, and it's not my job to answer them. The universe has already answered them. And so I'm not responsible for their experience or their request or responding to them in a way that they want. But I am responsible to myself to respond in the way that I want to be. And I want to be calm. I want to be relaxed. I want to be loving. And so whether I see them and respond to them in a way that they can perceive as calm, relaxed, and loving, I don't have to take on their response to me. I only have to take on my response to me and choose to be who I want to be in that situation. And as I make those choices, I've been noticing it recently that, you know, things push my buttons. Somebody does something and a couple of people that I love had a really big argument last week. And I got to be present for them to be yelling at each other. And it was a very uncomfortable situation because they both wanted me to respond in the way that was clearly in alignment with their rules. And I was willing to follow either of their rules, but their rules were contradictory. So I was in a position. And I thought, you know, the truth is that they can argue this out. I don't have to be a part of it. I don't have to be engaged in it. I don't have to solve it for them. They're going to solve it. And they're the ones who care. So I can let them have their drama. And I can just know that, and I backed off and I thought, you know, there's a problem with the policy that created this situation where both of them were trying to follow the rules, but they understood the rules differently and the rules weren't working in the situation we were in. And I thought, these rules need to be changed. They don't work. And these are the two people who have a firm opinion about what needs to be done. And they can go to the people who make the rules and say, it didn't work in this way, and this is one way it could work, or this is one way it could work, and those people can decide. And it has nothing to do with me. And I can love them both and see that each of them have a remarkable idea that ultimately may come to make this situation work out better. And I don't have to solve it for them, and I don't have to be upset about them, and I can really appreciate that each of them are strongly committed to what they're doing, and that they are open to new possibilities, and they both want to do the right thing. And I was able to think through it in a way that was relaxing and peaceful to me. And I never heard about another word about it from either one of them. They got it solved. And I was completely out of the situation, and I was happy, and it was all worked out before I came back into the situation. But I could have lost a lot of sleep about that, and I started to before I thought, no, wait a minute, I can take a time out here. I don't need to get upset about this. I can look at it from another way. And I just worked through it and worked through it and worked through it until I could find a way that I could appreciate where both of them were, and that both of them were contributing something valuable, and that it didn't have anything to do with me. And that my backing out of it and not getting upset about it, not getting engaged in it, and imagining a higher answer to come out of the desire of each of them being adorable in step one, was relaxing to me. And I believe that I probably created a climate where that situation could have been resolved a lot more easily than it might have been otherwise if I'd gotten engaged in the fight and taken sides and, you know, said, I think it should be done this way. I didn't need to do that. And I realized in a conversation with a friend the next day that it was very much like the situation in my home life as a child. You know, it was like my father and my grandmother putting my mother in the middle and asking her to make a decision about how things should happen. And so I got to see that it was a reflection of a pattern of thought that was very old in my mind that I could deal with in the present the way it was out picturing the present and come to a really different way of dealing with it than I ever was able to do as a child. And that was really helpful to me and an opportunity for me to remember that I'm in control of what I think. And how I respond in my life is dependent on how I think. And I believe that I'm much less likely to encounter a situation like that again, since I have a different pattern of thought in my mind that I worked out in response to that situation this time. So each time we have our buttons pushed, each time we get involved in the drama once again, we have a chance to engage at that level or to back off and say, I know there's a bigger picture here somewhere, and I'm going to just relax into it and allow that higher thought from the mind of God to flow through me and to see how I can engage this from a different perspective. It's much easier. And what we think about matters. And from now on, when I am about to encounter a situation like that, I will have created a different climate and environment for the universe to respond to bring me a different result. So it's exciting to me. This whole idea is exciting to me. And what we want God to be is what we focus on. And somehow that makes a difference to me, how motivated I am or inspired I am to focus my attention in the places that look like what I want God to show up in my life. And that's what I had to share with you today.
Thank you.
He said, the intellect may analyze, dissect, accept, or reject, but there is an intuitional faculty back of the intellect that knows more than the intellect. Mm-hmm. We do not all grab it right up like that. Therefore, we have to train the intellect to reach a place where it receives this greater illumination. And that's what I mean by stretching the mind. It is a practice of identifying ourselves with a larger life. This was the genius of Walt Whitman. It's what Buck called illumination of cosmic consciousness. The intellect identifies itself with the spirit until it makes possible a greater influx of the spirit into the intellect. There is one life. That life is God. That life is my life now. And as I sit here, that life, that light, is manifesting itself as me. How wonderful it is to know that we do affirm it, we do accept it without effort, and we do rejoice that it is so. And now for a few moments, let us practice together what I call stretching the mind. Maybe you've never done it or thought of it, but it doesn't matter. It's a process whereby one identifies yourself with a larger good after this fashion. There is one life. That life is God. That life is my life now. I am one with all the beauty of life. I am one with the strength of the wind and the wave, the glory of the sunset, the beauty of the sunrise. I am one with the song of the birds. I am one with the mother holding her child. I am one with the babe drinking from the fountain of life. I am that which thou art, eternal spirit, forever blessed. Thou art that which I am, perfect presence, divine expanding within me. I am one with the vast throng in the busy street, one with the silence and the solitude of nature, and the strength of the mountain, and the peace of the desert. I am one with the rain and the snow and the clouds in the sky, the life in the ocean. I am one with the lover and one with the beloved. All are encompassed within me, for now what we are doing is identifying ourselves with the eternal living presence within which all things are. We are one with that. That is what we are. Eternal presence forever blessed, eternal peace within me. Forever shall I be, encompassing planets and universes and time and space and the heart of God. I am that which thou art, O living presence. Thou art that which I am, eternal in the now, in the here and in this moment. It is so. Now may the light of eternal God be with us. May that light go before us, surround us, and penetrate us. May the love of God and of each other encompass and enfold us. In eternal peace, abide with us forevermore.